88.3 Southern FM.
Now, welcome to episode 10 of our Planet Earth series. Now, these programs are a mix of factual reports and poetry and some music, and all of them about our home planet.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
In 1972, I flew at night in a Boeing 707 from Bombay, as the city of Mumbai was then known, to Bahrain, and then on to Rome. I was sitting in a window seat on the port side of the aircraft. That was in the days when you got to the airport early so that you could ask the check-in clerk, non-smoking, window seat, not over the wing. That ensured you could see our wonderful world go by without the view being blocked by the wing and without the stink from smokers. As we flew up the Persian Gulf, the aircraft cabin lights were off and many passengers were asleep. I was glued to the window, amazed at the sight of hundreds of methane flares on the oil wells of the Arabian Peninsula. These flares were so bright and numerous that they lit the cabin of the Boeing with an orange glow. At the time, I thought that this was an enormous waste of energy. Surely, I thought, this natural gas could be captured and used as fuel. In later years, satellite photos showed large areas of the Middle East aglow at night. Back in 1972, very few people gave any thought to the resulting carbon dioxide from this burning that it would heat the atmosphere. The glasshouse effect was relatively unknown, even under the American term greenhouse effect. Even fewer people realized that burning off the excess methane from oil wells was a much better option than just releasing it to the atmosphere. Methane, it is now widely recognized, that molecule for molecule, methane is a much, much more potent greenhouse gas than carbon dioxide. Here in New Zealand, when gas was discovered offshore in Taranaki, a decision was made to use it to fuel cars and other road transport. CNG, or compressed natural gas, became a common fuel. Recently, the nascent New Zealand Space Agency was casting about looking for a mission beyond licensing Rocket Lab's Electron launches from the Mahia Peninsula. Its personnel at the agency recognised a way in which it could, at modest cost, tackle the problem of methane. On last week's The Space Show, we heard about methane and the proposal for a satellite called MethaneSat, which would identify the source of the atmospheric methane. This evening, we have more about this remarkable satellite and New Zealand's involvement in operating it and collecting methane tracing data. We're going to hear now, courtesy of the New Zealand Space Agency, a discussion about the satellite. And the subjects in the discussion is Peter Crabtree, the head of the New Zealand Space Agency. He's from Wellington. Stephen Hamburg, the chief scientist with the Environmental Defence Fund. And Sarah Mikuloff-Fletcher, who's a lead researcher on the MethaneSat project, and she's from Auckland. The interviewer is Haritina Mogosanu. She's the executive director of the New Zealand Astrobiology Network.
The World Space Week Association is the global coordinator for the World Space Week under the guidance of the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space, COPOS, and the United Nations Office for Outer Space Affairs. Every year, the World Space Week Association board chooses a theme. This year, the theme is Satellites Improve Life. New Zealand has joined its first official space mission as a country to combat climate change. It's called MethaneSat, and the mission's control center will be located here in New Zealand. I'm here with Dr. Peter Crabtree, the head of the New Zealand Space Agency, and Dr. Sarah Mikalo-Fletcher, lead researcher for the mission. Kia ora, Peter and Sarah. It is a real pleasure to have you here.
Kia ora.
Kia ora.
Peter, what is MethaneSat?
So MethaneSat is a mission with the objective of sensing atmospheric methane concentrations, and so with the idea that we gain better information about those concentrations, and that will enable us to do, for people to make better decisions and to understand the phenomena much better.
Why has New Zealand chosen a partnership with the Environmental Defence Fund in the US for our first official space mission?
Yeah, thank you. It's a good question. So there are two answers to that. So on the one hand, we were thinking about, prior to this, about doing something in a climate science area, and that being a really good objective for New Zealand, given our interest as a nation from a policy perspective and so on. And then on the other hand, it was an opportunity that came towards us to participate and be a partner in a really cutting edge space mission that also was going to happen with and what we thought was a reasonable time frame, given the pace that we were moving at, which was quite quick. So the idea of working with an organisation that was going to be quite nimble in putting together a space mission, when sometimes some space missions can be put together over a very long period of time. And we saw this as a real opportunity for New Zealand to step into something that was really quite a serious endeavour, but something that could really assist us as a nation in quite a number of different ways.
Let's cross over to Stephen Hamburg from EDF now. Stephen, could you please tell us a little bit more?
Hello, Harry, Peter, and Sarah. It's great to be with you. And it's great to have an opportunity to talk about MethaneSat, a mission that I'm passionate about. The idea of MethaneSat started a few years ago in conversations between Steve Woofsey, a professor at Harvard University, and myself, about the need to be able to collect methane flux data, how much methane was being emitted from around the world. And we didn't have that capacity. And without that knowledge, we really couldn't take advantage of the opportunity to reduce methane emissions because we didn't know where it was occurring. So we determined what we would need from a satellite and then went to the technology experts and asked, could we push the envelope on the technology to build the capacity and fly it in space? And while we're pushing the envelope, that technology has evolved, and it is now possible, and MethaneSat is the product of that integration of new technology, innovated science, and the inversion technology that Steve has pioneered into a program that allows us to do the advocacy to bring that data to the rest of the world. And EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, is well situated to lead this effort. EDF was founded by a group of scientists who understood a problem but didn't have the tools to implement the understanding into policy that resulted from that knowledge. And that initial problem was the impacts of DDT on birds of prey in eastern United States. So they got together and formed the Environmental Defense Fund, hired a lawyer, and then using their science went to look at and implement the needed ban on DDT, which was implemented in the early 1970s. So with methane emissions from oil and gas industry, we understand the impact it's having on the climate, but we didn't have the tools to bring that data and understanding to the many oil and gas producing regions in the world so that we could reduce those emissions and greatly slow the rate of warming. MethaneSat is very different than many other missions in that, as I mentioned, we started with the problem and then went to look at the solutions in that could the technology provide the data necessary to address that problem. We built an amazing team led by Tom Ingersoll, who comes out of the commercial space community, of people who are really committed to ensuring that we can use space technology to help society address one of the biggest crises we've ever faced, which is climate change. And so by getting the best of the space technology community together with the best of the scientific community, and then in partnership with New Zealand, which has been an incredible opportunity to really push this mission forward fast and implement it effectively, we're very much looking forward to the Operations Center being in New Zealand and to getting the satellite launched and the data flowing so that we can start to figure out where those methane emissions are coming from and ensure that people understand how those emissions can be mitigated and in turn getting that job done. New Zealand is a wonderful partner in that there is a real commitment to bringing good science to bear on the needs of society writ large, and that is the mission of EDF, and so we're really very pleased to have the partnership with the New Zealand government and the science community. We're partnering with New Zealand because it's a real natural fit. The focus of the Ministry for Business, Innovation, and Employment on the use of science to help improve New Zealand society and the well-being of your citizens fits wonderfully into the objectives of this mission and to the DNA of EDF as an organization for this 50 plus years. So by taking advantage of the scientific knowledge that already exists in New Zealand and to help develop the nascent space capacity in the country, we're able to accelerate progress on the mission while developing the skill sets in New Zealand. It's a partnership that we very much value and are confident will persist and enhance the work we're doing together over the coming years.
Thank you, Stephen. I have a couple of questions for Sarah. Mm-hmm. What is novel about this satellite mission?
So many things. It's an amazing mission. I mean, for me, on the technical side, there are two big things. One is that it's the first time we're going to have a satellite flying in the sky that's going to be able to measure methane with the kind of precision we'd expect to have if someone on my team tried to measure it with an instrument on the ground. That's extraordinary. The other thing is the spatial resolution. So this thing is going to capture a 200 by 200 kilometer scene. And within that scene, it's going to do a raster scan at very high precision. So we'll be able to pick out exactly where those emissions are happening. But then on the policy side, it's the first satellite that's really been purpose designed to support and enable climate action. So there are two big things happening there. One is that they're going to have inverse modeling as part of the whole framework, which is the modeling tool you use to go from what the satellite measures, which is the concentration, to what you need for policy action, which is to know the emissions. So that's going to be happening, you know, live throughout the satellite mission. And then in addition to that is the impact in communicating this quickly so that we can empower people to be able to reduce those emissions.
Tell me, Sarah, what relevant expertise do we have here in New Zealand to contribute to methane sat science?
Well, we have quite a bit going on in New Zealand. Like, New Zealand's been a leader in greenhouse gas measurements since before I was born. In fact, when I was a PhD student coming up at NOAA, which is kind of our opposite number in the US, NIWA was already famous to me for having the best methane isotopes almost anywhere in the world. And so we have this amazing rich history of these atmospheric measurements, both on the ground and also in the total air column. So you can imagine that you have a satellite, it's flying around, looking down, trying to measure things. To make sure you get that satellite measurement right, it's really helpful to have an instrument on the ground that looks up. It's a similar type of instrument, but it's on the ground. So there's all kinds of extra things you can do to work out what you're seeing when you have something that's ground-based. So New Zealand has one of the two initial ground-based instruments like this. They're called TCON instruments that support all types of satellite activities, and will be supporting MethaneSat as well. And then the third big thing is the modeling, right? So we have already a well-developed modeling framework that's operating at a very high resolution, where we'll be able to be right in there with that modeling to be able to turn those concentrations that we're seeing with satellite into the emissions we need to take policy action.
The next question is for Peter. What will New Zealand get out of being part of this mission?
Yeah, quite a lot. So we get to, there's a number of elements. So one element is that the mission control for this program is going to be based in New Zealand. So we get to participate in the program from an engineering perspective, setting up the mission control functions and all the protocols around the mission control itself. So that's from, I suppose, from a space capability perspective, that's a really good opportunity for us to step into the idea of hosting a world-class space mission. So very much for the space systems people, very excited about it from that perspective. Then the other side of things is the science. And so it's really around the fact that we get to stand alongside some international partners like Harvard University and the Smithsonian, and work with them on the science program. And so New Zealand's going to lead the agricultural emissions side of that, and with the US in particular focused on oil and gas emissions with methane emissions as well. So that gets us, we love the idea of international science partnerships that are operating at that level. They really help us get more impact out of our science programs. So those are those two elements. And then really the third bit is from a policy perspective, is New Zealand being able to make better informed decisions when we come to thinking around our own climate policies and so on.
Sarah, what are your plans for working with the Harvard team working on oil and gas industry methane?
All right, so another thing about MethaneSat we haven't talked about is that it was purpose designed to be able to tackle anthropogenic emissions, mostly from oil and gas. And that's because these are really the low-hanging fruits of climate action. If you tell people where a leak is, because it's usually an accidental leak, then you have a really good chance that those people are going to be excited to go fix that leak and reduce our methane. But there's this tremendous opportunity to be able to use the same data that are designed to be able to detect these oil and gas leaks for agricultural problems. So we also have agricultural emissions of methane from sheep, cows, rice paddies, those types of things. And the aim of the New Zealand-based science project is to develop the capability to use these data to detect those agricultural emissions, not only giving New Zealand some of the best information anywhere in the world about our agricultural emissions, but also helping to design a framework for how the international team can pick other places they might want to look at and target to support climate action there.
Peter, the theme of World Space Week this year is Satellites Improve Life. What other satellite activities is the New Zealand Space Agency involved in?
So the New Zealand's a pretty young space actor. So as we, we've got a space sector now, which is it's about $1.7 billion worth of activity, but we're still quite young. And so in terms of satellite development, a lot of our effort is going into largely educational institutions, probably smaller scale satellite programs, CubeSat opportunities, which start to, on the one hand, demonstrate what you can do with small satellites as a capability, and the things you can do with small satellites every day, like miniaturization across all technologies, is that it's ever expanding. We're also really interested from a government perspective as what are the government's needs that can be better addressed through satellites. So that is, and so really at the moment we're spending a lot of time across government working with lots of agencies that have an interest in, and have for a long time often used Earth observation, but it's really about the New Zealand government being a super user of satellites. And I think over time that will lead us to getting clearer about which areas we want to invest in particular when it comes to the satellite capabilities. So we're on a journey at the moment.
And would you like to see New Zealand making greater use of satellite data?
Yeah, absolutely, and I think it's quite a challenge for a lot of people who have not been exposed to the possibilities of this. And there are lots of things that we do that at the moment we might, you know, that we might be on Earth and we might measure in certain ways, and it's often it's quite labour intensive and resource intensive. But also, you know, the issue around frontier technologies like this is that they push the boundaries of what might be possible. So so what if from space you could every day you could track, or every week you could track about whether we were winning the battle against possums in our conservation estate, you know, and suddenly on your desktop you've got machine, you know, AI robots essentially being able to tell you that those species are thriving or not thriving. And so we're interested in that. We're seeing those kinds of possibilities all over the place. And I suppose it's a question of getting the, in a sense, the customers or your potential users to understand that that is a real possibility. And on the other hand, that we fast track our technology development so that we can actually give people these types of solutions. It's really, really exciting time.
But this is what World Space Week is all about, yeah, as well, bringing space technology here to people on Earth. So we are on a very good path.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, thank you very, very much, Peter and Sarah, for your time and for coming here, and happy World Space Week.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That discussion was hosted by the New Zealand Space Agency. Now, I'll hand back now momentarily to Rock and Dave in Space Show Mission Control in Melbourne.
On FM, online, and on TuneIn, 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
And this is The Space Show, coming from New Zealand.
Earth, below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless.
Tom Ingersoll is the project co-lead on MethaneSat. He's the former chief executive officer of Skybox Imaging. And Dan McLeese is an atmospheric scientist with MethaneSat Science Advisory Group. He's the former chief scientist at the Jet Propulsion Laboratory. And this feature comes courtesy of EDL.
Climate change is perhaps the most important scientific problem of our age.
There is so much that's needed to really understand the sources of greenhouse gas emissions. An instrument like MethaneSat that can shine a light on really what's going on can have a very significant impact.
It's a bold idea to be able to take a small sat, this is a new field, and begin to use it for environmental purposes, which is to map methane emissions from oil and gas production all over the planet.
The goal of 45% reduction in methane emissions by 2025 is audacious on many levels, but quite frankly, very achievable if we do this right. There are programs looking at macro scale and the nano scale, but there was nothing in between. If you try to understand what's happening at a regional level, down to the local or even facility level, there just was no way to assess methane emissions. And so we fill a very, very important void in the overall methane detection and management ecosystem.
The process of actually changing policy and practices is really one of getting very, very high quality data that consists of measurements that people believe in. Once there's confidence in what you've seen, then you can begin talking about ways you can control the emissions, reduce leakage.
That can be groundbreaking because we can move so much more quickly than a lot of the government agencies can and be so much more focused on specific objectives that are tied to action and drives change.
And now on The Space Show, we have a feature from Radio New Zealand.
Measuring New Zealand's methane from space has just come a step closer. MethaneSat is an international space mission that aims to help tackle climate change through a methane tracking satellite. It's a joint United States-New Zealand operation, and with $26 million invested, the first New Zealand government-funded space mission. This morning, the Minister of Research, Science and Innovation, Megan Woods, has announced that mission control for the project will be permanently based at University of Auckland's Te Pūnaha Ātea Auckland Space Institute with the help of Rocket Lab. Dr. Sarah Mikhailov-Fletcher is an atmospheric scientist with NIWA, who's leading a team of key New Zealand scientists who'll work alongside Harvard University on analysing the data.
MethaneSat's a really unique satellite. It's the first satellite to detect greenhouse gases that's ever going to be launched that's mostly funded by philanthropic contributions. And the goal of MethaneSat is really to support reductions of methane emissions by detecting methane at unprecedented spatial resolutions. So the satellite's primary focus is around detecting oil and gas leaks, because those are methane emissions that are usually happening by accident. So you can get quite a lot of methane emissions from accidental leaking of methane in pipelines, manufacturing plants. And often, if you can detect those emissions, it's quite economical for people to fix them. So it can be an environmental solution with some really easy wins. But in addition to that primary focus around oil and gas leak detection, the satellite data can also be used to detect agricultural emissions. And that's the focus of Aotearoa New Zealand's Agricultural Emission Science Project.
So this must be super sensitive
to do that.
This must be super sensitive then, Sarah, to be able to detect that.
It's unbelievably sensitive. The satellite's not in the sky yet. It's launching in fall 2022. But it's expected to be able to detect to 2 to 4 parts per billion. So out of every billion of molecules in the air, it's expected to be able to be sensitive enough to detect just 2 methane molecules, which is the same kind of sensitivity you'd expect even from an analyzer we might put on the ground. The launch is expected late next year, late 2022. And the priorities are really for our New Zealand team in the science sector are around getting all of our models and all of our instruments in place so that we can achieve the biggest result we can from the very beginning. So we'll have lots of ground-based observations that are going to support being able to show that we can detect what we think we can detect from the satellite. So New Zealand will really be the proving ground to show how well this method can work before it's used other places overseas.
Let's look more closely, Sarah, at the two parts to this project, this gathering data to reduce methane emissions from oil and gas around the world from 45%. So this is what, going to have a global reach and global analysis?
Yeah, it's going to have a global analysis. So how the satellite works is you identify a specific target, and that target's like around 200 kilometers by 200 kilometers square. But within that, you take a little picture, and that picture can be right down to 100 meter by 400 meter resolution. And you can see those methane emissions at that very high resolution inside that picture. So the specific locations have been identified where we're likely to see oil and gas. That's outside my purview, but I'm also responsible for identifying the places where we could look for agricultural emissions around the world. My wider team is.
We've mentioned the New Zealand's methane emissions. I think rice paddies are another case in point.
Yeah, we'll be looking at rice paddies as well. So, of course, here in Aotearoa, New Zealand, our primary emissions from agriculture, they're from cows and sheep. But worldwide, the rice paddies will also be really important.
We have this issue with methane emissions, of course, with our large agricultural base. But having New Zealand as a centre for analysing the data, what made us a good place for that?
Well, so here I can comment the best on what makes New Zealand a great place to have the Agricultural Science Project, right? And one of those reasons is our long history of leadership in agricultural greenhouse gas emissions. That's a history that goes back a lot longer than I've been in the field. Another thing is our incredible measurements capability. We have what's called a TCON site. It's one of these measurement sites that looks up at the sky in the same way that the satellites look down at the ground, and it's the beating heart of showing the value of the satellite, calibrating it for all of the satellites that detect greenhouse gas emissions. Really, TCON is really at the heart of that. So we have TCON sites. We have a great ground-based methane measurement capability. And we have very high-resolution atmospheric modeling, which is important for being able to link the concentrations you detect in the atmosphere with what you actually need for policy, which is the emissions. You need to know how the air moved after those emissions occurred and before the satellite detected them.
Sounds inspirational for our young people who are interested in space research. They may not have to leave the country after all.
It really is. It's an exciting time for Aotearoa. I'm excited for my own kids to be able to grow up in a country with all of this amazing work happening.
Here's the thing. With all the data that you are going to be crunching the numbers and sharing the findings, do you have an idea then of how that information will be used? Because presumably not everybody whose emissions are going to be logged in this way going to be too happy about it or be prepared to do anything about it if your data raises issues of concern.
I mean, the last thing that we would like people to think is that our goal here with the satellite is to be spying on their cows, right? That's not the goal of the satellite. So, you know, here in Aotearoa, what we're going to be doing is providing a lot of detailed spatial information that will help policymakers understand what's going on at the regional spatial scale, which is a lot of what you need for real decision making. And we'll also be providing a really nice baseline so that if new technologies become available in the future for reducing methane emissions from agriculture, we'll be well positioned to prove that that's working and that the actions and the investments of the community, of the agricultural community, are having the impact that we want them to have. So it's really about providing information for our transition to a low-carbon economy and also that opportunity to really show the benefits of our actions. You know, overseas we'll be working with lots of policy folks, both at Environmental Defense Fund and, you know, through our own government, I hope, so that we can not just be identifying the places where the methane emissions from agriculture are likely to be big and easy to detect, but also be detecting places where there's like a real opportunity to mitigate that, to reduce those emissions, so that we can be focusing our efforts on where the satellite can do the most good.
That core mission to reduce methane emissions from oil and gas around the world by 45%, I mean, that's a hugely ambitious goal. But in your view, is that achievable?
Yes, I do. I think it's audacious. And I think there's a lot of potential to achieve that. The part I have the hardest time commenting on is the policy side, because that's really outside my sphere of knowledge. I know a lot about the science, but how hard it's going to be for that policy implementation, I can't comment on that. But I think a lot of people involved in this project are well-placed to comment on that.
Do you think we know more or less about methane agricultural emissions than we do about oil and gas? Where are you most excited to find out more about what's happening out there?
I think oil and gas has the advantage of that there are a lot of easy wins, right? There's a lot of potential for wins with fewer losers, right, in the sector. But my sense is that the uncertainty is bigger on the agriculture sector. Not necessarily here in New Zealand. We have some of the best inventory data anywhere in the world. But when you think about where we might be looking worldwide, there's a lot of uncertainty in those agricultural emissions. And there's still a lot of debate about the global methane budget. So if we can help to nail down the agricultural emissions and the global budget, that would be a huge contribution for science.
Do you know yet how big your team with the other New Zealand scientists is going to be?
I do. We have contributions from people all around Aotearoa, New Zealand. We have colleagues from the University of Auckland on board, University of Waikato, Manaaki Whenua Landcare Research, GNS Science, and we're working also alongside Naitahu.
We've been involved in some similar research, I think, Sarah, in the past with Carbon Watch NZ. How's that worked?
that's been a really exciting process. I mean, really, that was the project that helped to prepare me to take on this project. And Carbon Watch does very similar modeling to the type of modeling we'll be using to be able to use the methane fat data to infer emissions. But the focus of Carbon Watch is on the ground-based measurements. And also, methane is a much smaller part of Carbon Watch. So we're working with methane, but the primary focus is really around CO2 uptake and emissions from our forests, urban environments, and pasture, and cracking those problems.
Dr. Sarah Michaloff.
Thank you, Radio New Zealand. Now, we're going to pass momentarily back to Rock and Dave, who's in Mission Control in Southern FM, and he's got some messages. And so if you want more details about that, you can go to space.asn.au. And I believe Dave Suskin's got another message for us.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
This is Planet Earth. You're looking at Planet Earth. Ba, 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 ba. This is Planet Earth.
The Mission Operations Control Center for Methane SAT will be in Auckland. It will be developed by Rocket Lab, whose launch control center is also in Auckland. Now, Rocket Lab will also manage and operate the Methane SAT Control Center. They will deliver the critical information technology and software infrastructure necessary to control the satellite in orbit. This includes tracking, pointing, positioning, and collision avoidance. Now, that last is important. Collision avoidance. Gone are the days of the early space age when you could throw a satellite into orbit willy-nilly and not worry about it ever hitting another satellite. These days, there are thousands of satellites orbiting the Earth. In fact, here in the South Island of New Zealand, where it's a good dark skies, it's very easy to see up to three or four satellites crossing at any one moment soon after sunset. While the chances of two satellites colliding is now very, very real. Rocket Lab will also manage the collection and dissemination of climate change data generated by Methane SAT. This management will endure for 12 months, after which Rocket Lab will train New Zealanders in mission management and satellite operations. The Methane SAT Mission Operations Control Centre will be functional by the middle of next year, ahead of the satellite launch in the fourth quarter of 2022.
Earth below us. Drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
Between 1966 and 1974, France conducted numerous atmospheric nuclear bomb tests at Muaroa Atoll in the Pacific Ocean. Following protests from New Zealand and other Pacific nations, the tests were moved underground and continued until 1996. When, in February of 1986, France launched an Earth observation satellite called Spot 1, some New Zealand activists tried to order some images of Muaroa. The Spot Image Company always replied that it was cloudy over the atoll and it had no pictures. Few, if any, New Zealanders believed this excuse. The New Zealand band Herbs are considered pioneers of the Pacific reggae sound. During the 1980s and early 1990s, they had 10 top 20 hits. In 1982, they released French Letter to protest the French nuclear tests at Muaroa. It spent 11 weeks in the charts, peaking at number 15. And this despite getting little radio play because its title was considered too risque. Rather than French letter, it was usually introduced as A Letter to France. It was re-released in 1995 to protest against the French resumption of nuclear testing at Mururoa Atoll. Now note the use of a French accordion in combination with a reggae beat, helping create a distinctive Pacific sound. And I managed to dig this out of the library of the community radio station in which I'm sitting now, right here in the South Island of New Zealand. And that was French Letter by the New Zealand band Herbs. Well, we now have a feature from the Goddard Space Flight Center in Maryland. And it shows how satellite observations are helping show that the Earth systems are all interconnected.
Our planet is the setting for dazzling and interconnected webs of energy, physical phenomena, and life. Amazing to behold from close up, and hypnotic when seen from above. From space, the fleet of Earth-observing satellites operated by NASA and its partners illuminate the links between these systems. Temperatures on the planet affect all of them, which means each one is impacted by a warming climate. During 2020, global temperatures matched the warmest year we've measured, and we experienced the most active hurricane season ever recorded, with many storms quickly intensifying, likely as a result of warmer seas. Heat in the oceans is like fuel that powers these massive storms. But incredibly, dust swept up from northern Africa actually plays a critical role in the formation of hurricanes. It's also a key source of fertilization for the Amazon rainforest. Due to climate change, dust plumes are expected to decline, and then so will their impacts on vegetation and ocean away. Our satellites and field research allow us to pay close attention to the Amazon rainforest and other vegetation across the world, helping us track how fires, deforestation, and disasters affect the world's plant life. We can also study how those vegetation changes, in turn, impact air quality, waterways, and the climate. That same science helps the world's farmers boost productivity and deal with extreme weather, including drought, early freezes, and heavy spring rains. The observations can also help track some unwanted byproducts of food production. Fertilizers used in farming contain high amounts of nutrients to help crops grow, but those same nutrients can cause sometimes dangerous blooms of algae in waterways, which can affect local economies, recreation, fishing, and human health. They're often so large, they're easily viewed from space. Clean water and clean air are two cornerstones for maintaining healthy people and wildlife. Satellite data and NASA funding help map how animal migrations are affected by water sources, as well as light pollution and habitat loss, and also helps find solutions. The view from space is especially important in the Arctic and Antarctic, where animal habitats are rapidly changing due to climate change. And so is the ice itself, with Greenland and Antarctica losing enough ice in just 16 years to raise sea level by half an inch globally. We can also measure snow and ice farther from the poles, such as vital snowpacks in the Sierra Nevada and Rockies, and in the Himalayas, where rapidly draining glacial lakes can cause sudden and dangerous bursts of water downstream. Earth's climate is changing, and with it has come a new intensity to weather events and hazards that can lead to disasters, including floods, fires, hurricanes, and heat waves. As disasters become more frequent and intense, NASA will use its satellites and resources to study the effects of climate change on natural systems and to connect people to technology that can build a more resilient world.
And it's just about time to sign off here in New Zealand and going back to Melbourne, Australia, and the studios of Southern FM.